You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 2. Brought to you in part by Alpine Credits. Own your home and need a loan? With Alpine Credits, homeowners get approved. An afternoon drive home like no other.
Jerry does this for the love of the game. Only south of the border, though. I hate you sons of in Canada.
I don't want any funny when Jerry gets enshrined.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Hour 2 live from the Hockey Hall of Fame. This is Overdrive. I'm Brian Hayes with Jamie Noodles McLennan and the O-Dog Jeff O'Neill. You guys are being harassed a little bit. There's some super fans kicking around with cards. How often does that happen when you guys go to events like this?
Only something like this. I don't know how these people have it. It's like,
well, they
just have it. I don't know how the hell they know where you are or where you're going to be. They're called seekers.
Yeah, but, I mean, in scenarios like this, like, we would land, which is weird. You'd land in, say, like, Dallas at 2 o'clock in the morning. And you get off the bus at the hotel, and there's 40 people waiting for
I got to a point, Jamie, like, you guys know I'm a nice person. I'm highly irritable, but
yeah.
I got to the point, I'm like, if you're a grown-ass man and you're sitting out at 2 o'clock in the morning wanting autographs, not doing it. Like, you're a loser.
I
and you're selling it online. I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Sean Hill, I played with him. His line was, sorry, guys, I don't sign on my birthday. Every trip, I would just say, guys, it's my birthday. I don't sign on my birthday.
Nobody really wanted mine very much. But I mean, people would, but
I had one teammate that would go through the line and just double bird it.
Really?
To the seekers.
What's the point of doing that, though?
I don't know.
Like, that is such an uncalled for maneuver.
Dude, they can be ridiculous, man. They can be rude. Well, it's just they're gross, and they got ketchup and garbage all over their jersey. It's just, you talk about, we got hand sanitizer here. You talk about wanting to take a okay, gross.
Yeah, I used to sign all the time, and the reason I did is because if that was that person's job, like, they've probably been standing there for like 3-4 hours, like, to get the 25 cents they're going to get off of my card. Like, I'd give it to them, but like,
nah, sorry, pal.
For me, I didn't care. It just, I was fine when people were polite. I hated it when people were rude.
Heard, like, some stories over,
like,
the years.
You're right. Seekers and like paparazzi. I've actually witnessed paparazzi be jackasses to Hollywood people. We were at a bar one night in L.A., and Lauren Holly was with us, so Mary Swanson, right at the height of her, you know, her stardom. Scott Wolf was with us from Party of Five, a couple people that were quite recognizable. And we came out, and Pronger happened to be there, I think, or Jamal Mayers, a couple guys that nobody knew who we were. So we came out, and those people signed some autographs for the Seekers, and the minute they finished their signature, the Seeker, the paparazzi had rude comments for him. Oh, Jim Carrey kicked you to the curb, eh? How's that feel? Like,
trying to, like, provoke.
Provoke.
Yeah.
And get a reaction. And I remember thinking, like, that's a loser move. Like, you know, that type of stuff. That's not what the Seekers are all about. The Seekers, for the most part, are just trying to do a job. That's their job, is to collect autographs and sell them online or whatever. But I think to each his own. It's just, if you're a guy like Crosby or
tonight's
McDavid,
a big night for it, right? Like, there are Gretzky's going to be in the house.
Exactly.
Marty Brodeur, Marty St. Louis are going in.
There are going to be. Will be all out there waiting, trying to get Marty Brodeur, Marty St. Louis to sign something that they have in their collection. And that's not going to go, you know, onto their wall. That'll go online,
right?
Because that's their store. That's what they do.
And it's unique to celebrities, right? Athletes, musicians, actors.
Yeah.
Your autograph is actually worth a lot of money, or it can be worth a lot of money. And that's what you get down here at the Hockey Hall of Fame, especially on a night like tonight. This is inductee night, and Duffy's going to be on stage. We heard him preparing earlier this afternoon, and it's a pretty big class.
It is.
And it's a good class. And Marty Brodeur's going in, Marty St. Louis, Willie O'Ree's going in, Jana Heffert's going in. Obviously, we know Gary Bettman is going in tonight.
Yeah.
And Wayne Gretzky, we believe, will be in attendance. And he was on the lunch earlier today. And there was a lot of news that came out of the weekend. Obviously, the fact that the Leafs went 1-1 and again, in Boston, it was a bit of an ugly night, and I used the LeBron analogy earlier this afternoon that Pasternak, Marchand, Bergeron equal LeBron, and what he did to the Raps forever is what this top line has done to the Leafs for the past couple of years. But the William Nylander news,
we
actually had something this weekend. Something actually came out that changed. It sounds as if the Leafs have told teams throughout the league, if you're serious, let us know what you're willing to offer, and then we're going to have to discuss it. Wayne Gretzky was on Leafs Lunch earlier today, and this is a guy who is being paid by the Edmonton Oilers. Like, he is affiliated with the Oilers. He's a quote-unquote executive with another team in the league.
Figurehead. Yeah.
And he was asked about William Nylander's situation and what kind of advice he would give to Nylander, and here's what he said earlier today.
I think he has to sit down and say, look, I'm playing in a great city, I'm playing with a great organization, I'm playing with an original 16. Do I really want to not be there? And they got a chance, they have a legitimate chance to win a Stanley Cup.
So, again, this is a guy who is the greatest player of all time.
Yes.
Or on a short list. Also someone, though, employed by another team. I'm a little bit...
So you got to be careful.
I'm a little bit surprised he was willing to even answer the question. Now, Gretzky is not like a GM, and I think everyone understands
No, that's not Jim Benning. You didn't ask Jim Benning whether Nylander should sign.
No, of course not. And he didn't say, you know, listen, we hope that we can acquire him now that he could be available trade or anything along those lines. But that's an interesting comment from Gretzky. It's one thing for guys like us to say it. It's another thing for people to tweet about it or post something on Instagram.
Right.
I would think William Nylander is going to know that Wayne Gretzky was talking about his situation.
For sure, because we're going to talk about it. And I think everyone around is, it's going to get sound bites. When Wayne Gretzky's talking about William Nylander's situation, whether it's legal or not, I don't think legal is the right word.
I'm not saying he's tampering anything like that.
But it's just, when Wayne Gretzky weighs in on anything, people listen. So William Nylander's going to hear that soundbite or read it online and saying, geez, Gretzky's weighing in about it. It's not going to change the way. Like, I honestly feel that William Nylander has to live in a bubble right now.
I think he's done a pretty good job of that.
Yeah.
Here's Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst. How would you feel about that, Ray, if you were in a contract negotiation and you heard that Wayne Gretzky had a comment about that negotiation?
Well, if it was me, I'd wonder why Wayne had any opinion on what I was doing. I think I'd be kind of flattered a little bit. And then if it didn't agree with my view, whether it was Wayne Gretzky or not, I'd be like, well, what the hell does he know about it?
Yeah.
You know, like, because it's your world, like whether it's Wayne Gretzky or, I don't know, pick any other player, unless you know exactly what's going on, like unless we know what Dubas has offered, what they've countered with, unless we really know the parameters, we're all kind of like guessing along a little bit. Right. I mean, we can sort of understand where the needle needs to get to, but we don't really know. You know, how can we? I mean, unless the thing gets negotiated in public.
Right.
Well, and eventually I would think that's going to get out. Like, that'll be an interesting development. This is a Maple Leaf team that has now prided themselves for the past few years on being ironclad.
Yeah, privacy.
Nothing gets out. Yeah. We don't leak anything. That will be challenged in the next 3 weeks, and it will be extremely challenged if they trade him.
Well, let me.
They trade him. I guarantee you, for the first time in years, something will leak about how greedy the player's been.
Let's go around the table here. What do you think about Jonas' statement today, saying, "Here's what they should do. If he doesn't want to sign with the Maple Leafs, you don't trade him. You make him sit for the year."
Ray, I can understand that. Go ahead, Ray.
My first thought to that is, it shouldn't be vindictive. It should be, okay, what do we do that's best for our team in the long run?
Yeah, I guess that's all.
Like,
you
if it's okay, look, we got a great offer, then you make a trade. If you don't have a great offer, then you let them sit. You can't say, oh, I'm really mad at you, so I'm going to make you sit here for the year. Like,
right?
I don't know. That's not how it. To me, that's not the right way to look at things. You're trying to do the best you can to make your team the best that it can be, and you'd love to have William Nylander in it, and if you can't get him signed and you don't have a really good trade offer, then you let him sit. But if you've got a good trade offer, maybe you look at that in a different light.
Yeah, I agree with you. Vindictive, that's not the right
approach. No, it's a business.
Yeah, you can't be – but there's it's all about the trickle effect, right? Like what is happening right now is going to affect their approach when it comes to Marner and Matthews.
But you're right. But, like, if Kyle Dubas – let's just paint a picture here. If Kyle Dubas says, okay, we feel that this is a fair offer, it's not going to work out, let's revisit this in July when our season's done. You know, you could – I think there would be a small percentage that would applaud Dubas for lack of better words, the balls to do that. And it's also a ripple effect. But, like, are you letting Austin Matthews sit out a full year if he wants – $15 million a year and you
no,
can't fit him in?
But you've got a number on Matthews. This idea right. that it's a blank check and he fills it in is not, it's not true. It never has been true.
Right.
They've got a number for him too. And if he comes above it, they've got to put their stake in the ground. They've got to negotiate.
And that's fair. I think it's very, like, I want to paint a picture here. Like, would you not, and I know the Leafs, this isn't the way that they do it, but at some point, it is going to get put to the court of public opinion. And I'll give you a small example. Brendan Shanahan kind of broached that slightly when he did his Q&A out of nowhere.
About his Detroit days and all that.
Detroit days and that. That was almost like a little, hey, I'm going to give you a little nugget as to what we're thinking, and let's see the reaction around there. Maybe that would be, you know, if there's 10 pressure points, that may have applied one of them, to see if people would get up, there would be an uproar, there'd be a talk, and kind of get the juices flowing. Like,
yeah,
I don't
nothing's
know.
Been said since then.
Exactly,
that,
right
that,
way.
That, so, that went over so well, that, right? Like, they're like, right. There's no point to say anything.
But do you think in the next 2 weeks that either side would leak the numbers?
I think if he gets dealt, they get out. Absolutely. Because
okay, but so Brian, hang on, let me interrupt. So, but who are you going to really believe? Max Pacioretty just went back to Montreal. They still, each side tells a different story about whether he asked to be traded or not.
Right,
right.
Like, it can't be that hard. Either he did or he didn't. He says no. They say yeah. So you're like, huh, oh, well, there you go. So if they leak a number, the other side can easily say, no, they didn't offer that, even if they did.
Yeah, that's true.
Because they're not going to give you the piece of paper that shows the written offer on it.
Yeah,
so you can always defend your position. I mean, people have already made up their mind. They already, whatever the numbers are, they've already made up their mind whether Nylander should sign or shouldn't sign or should be traded or shouldn't be traded. I don't know that. I mean, I didn't think it was going to get into this. Like to hear, I thought this would be done a long time ago. So I'm really curious. They're not as good a team without him as they are with. They could use him, and if they can't use him and they can't come to an agreement and there's no trade, then I don't think you make one just to dump him. I think that would be a terrible move.
No, I agree with you, but I do think if it goes beyond December 1st and he's not signed, there will effectively be a trade demand on December 2nd. I think that's it. I can't picture Nylander playing here next year if he doesn't play here this year. And I'm just based on history, Ray, with this type of a hold, it's not a holdout, but contract negotiation where they can't come to terms. In reality, I'm not sure Nylander's here in 2 or 3 years anyway, because generally this kind of, it really sours the relationship. And at some point, Kyle Turris got moved on from P.K. Subban. P.K. Subban moved on. Ryan O'Reilly moved on. Like, it just, the history is there.
That wouldn't that give you even more understanding of why Nylander's so hesitant or cautious about signing a deal here? Because if it's a six-year deal, if that's their seven-year deal or whatever they were talking about, or even if it's a little bit less, if on your road or your scenarios that he's going to get dealt or possibly be dealt in a few years, you want to be pretty sure you've got the right deal, because you might not be in the place you want to be.
What do you make of the
protect yourself?
Sorry, Ray.
Go ahead.
what do you make of the Pastrnak comparison? Because I went on Twitter, you say the word Pastrnak, and people are like, well, I bet you Pastrnak hates his contract right now because he's so underpaid. And everybody else's argument is they got to pay this guy. Like, if the Pastrnak contract is out there, take it and sign it. But there's other people saying that Pastrnak probably hates his contract right now.
Well, I hope he doesn't.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, like, my agent was Steve Bartlett, and Steve was a his sons now are in the business, and Steve's just an incredibly level-headed guy. And he gave me this advice when I signed one time. He's like, look, the second you sign this, I want you to be sure that you like it and you're happy, because eventually somebody's going to leapfrog you, and you can't be pissed off about it, because it just is. That's just the way it goes. So Pastrnak signed his deal. Now, he signed it at a time that, you know, they were taking a little bit of a leap of faith. They were projecting that he was going to be a star player. And I remember when he signed, it seemed like a lot of money for him, for what he'd done. Right now, it doesn't seem like a lot of money. Like, right now, you're like, man, it is a lot of money, but holy crap, is that guy good? And William Nylander is not, at this stage, David Pastrnak.
I personally don't. I mean, I like William Nylander, but I don't ever see William Nylander getting to Pastrnak's level, personally. I think he's a very good player, but I think Pastrnak is an elite player, and there's differences. And now I still believe that Nylander can be, you know, in a great season, an 80 to 90 point guy playing with Matthews, having that, you know, that type of thing. But I,
like, that's a big number.
It's
man.
A big, like, number. That's what I'm saying. Like, when it comes down to it, is the guy a 70 point guy? Like, he's a 60 point guy 2 years in a row, and everyone thinks he's a goal scorer. He's 20 goals,
right.
22 goals. Like, okay, so can he get to 30? Probably. Well, what does 30 goals pay? Like, I think people are overthinking it. And when you start using comparables, like, they're in the wrong neighborhood thinking Pastrnak. Like, Pastrnak is far gone when it comes to William Nylander. Like, Pastrnak, Nylander will never be the player David Pastrnak is, in my opinion, personally.
No, not even close.
That's just my opinion. Now, I hope that, for the Leafs' sake, that he becomes somewhere in that neighborhood, close to it, because that means he's an 80-point guy and he's going to have tremendous success, and that translates to what the Leafs having success. But, like, I still come back to Nikolaj Ehlers. I look at Nick Ehlers and I see William Nylander, a guy who's in and out of games, a guy who has flashes of brilliance, and then other times where he's sleeping where the coach has to kick his ass. Like, that's what
Ehlers just scored, right?
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, he had gone like 26 games or 28 games back into last year without a goal.
Right.
And I'm gonna venture to say it'll be never that David Pastrnak goes 28 games without a goal. Like,
correct.
I think the guy's a stud. I think he's a star, and he's also got the amazing benefit of playing on a line that just fits. Like, oh my gosh, him and Bergeron and Marchand are just, it's such a fantastic line to watch. And he's the trigger guy on it. And he's in the right spot, and he's the right player for it. And I don't think the Leafs, you know, get as tied up in all this stuff. They made their comparables a long time ago. You know, when made their offer, they've already worked through comparables both up and down, maybe higher ceiling and lower ceiling. And, you know, being emotional is good for a player. It's not good for any negotiation. And they just got to sit and stick to what they're doing. And as does Nylander. And eventually it'll come to a conclusion. And I, like I said earlier, I thought this would be done a long time ago. So I don't have a great feel either way anymore, whether this will get done or not.
That top line in Boston, man, they've been doing it for a couple of years now. And on Saturday night, they put on a clinic. And we saw that a lot last April against the Leafs. And that is just the Maple Leaf kryptonite right now. And they're not alone, but there aren't many other teams in the league that are going to meet them in the playoffs. And Toronto's one of two or three teams that will likely meet Boston. How do they shut that line down? Or how do they contain that line between now and April?
Well, it's really kind of, when I watch it, it's really interesting. Usually I would say you take the guts of the line, the center of the line, and try and take them out of the game. So get somebody up tight to Bergeron. Don't let him handle the puck. But let's assume you can do that. The problem is then you got Marchand that runs all over the place with the puck. He's dynamic. He can turn sharply to lose players. He makes terrific passes. He's a scorer. So what makes that line to me most dangerous is like a good power play. There's not one point of attack. There's two. On a power play, a good power play, like when the Leafs were rolling early, the point of attack was where? Was it Riley? Was it Marner? Was it Matthews? Like, you can't shut everything down. Oh, it went down low to Tavares. Oh, look at that. Now he walks to the front of the net. So, and that doesn't even get into Kadri. Well, for the Bruins, okay, so get somebody up in Bergeron's face. Great, now Marchand's got more room to roam with the puck. Or get somebody up into Marchand's face. Now Bergeron's got room. You can't be standing next to beside these guys the whole game. You can't shadow like you used to shadow. I think it's a real challenge to take that line out of their rhythm. I wouldn't envy the team that's got to try and do it in the playoff series. Maybe what you can do is try and limit their damage because they're a one-line team, essentially, and try and beat them on the other three lines.
Yeah.
Ray, what do you make of the goaltender Garrett Sparks' comment saying that Pasternak's shot was the hardest thing I've ever seen? I don't know. I didn't like it. What are your thoughts on it? I thought it was just a...
That one I didn't mind, though. It was the way he said something about, you know, they're making like 60-foot passes and one-timing them. And, you know, like, I don't know. It almost sounded to me, I think we're saying the same thing. It sounded like he was saying, you know, well, I can't do anything about that. You know, like absolving himself from making a save. Like the Noodles, you're the goalie. You tell me. The Pasternak goal, the one-timer when he ends up spinning and falling down.
Yeah.
Right? The great pass across and he one-times it. It went right in the middle of the net, didn't it?
It did. I mean, you know, Sparks was playing. Obviously, you have to front the puck and then anything that goes through.
Is it too fast? Is it too fast to pass and too fast to shot? Because to me, where it went in the net, I'm like, that looked kind of funny.
Well,
I don't know
why
it could have been different, but it looked funny.
You're right, because I think he picked it up late, and by the time he picked it up, it's like behind you already. You know, and players always have that joke, Ray. I think you used to say it to me when in practice sometimes where, you know, goalie's looking for the puck, and it's always like, hey, it's behind you already.
It's behind you.
and that's, you know, I looked at those goals, and I'm like, he's finding the puck when he's hearing the crowd.
Right.
The crowd react.
I didn't like the team it was against, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm all for honesty and being a fun quote and all that kind of stuff, but you're the backup goalie. You're just trying to find your way in it, and you're pumping the tires of a line that has crushed your team and a line and a player that has crushed your team in the playoffs.
Right.
And right now, Boston is probably the Maple Leafs' biggest rival, and Garrett Sparks is coming out here and making David Pastrnak sound like the greatest player of all time. I just don't like – I don't. Maybe that's an old-school mentality, but there's no way Babcock would have liked that. No chance.
Well, if they don't, then they should tell him. Because
yeah.
I think there's an honesty to Sparks. I think he's kind of like an open book. And you remember when he got the shutout back a few years ago and he was like crying in the interview? Like, he's like an open book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so maybe somebody needs to have a word with him if that really bothers them so much. But I don't think he would have thought anything more than maybe he was just really impressed. He went, holy hell, those guys are good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like,
well, they are. I mean, he's not wrong.
Yeah.
It just, you know, it's one thing for us to say it. It's another thing for the guy who's trying to stop it. Anyway. All right, buddy. Well, there's four games going tonight. I know that always rattles your cage that they're playing during the Hall of Fame, but
yes,
we'll
I don't
see.
Like that. I wish it was Hall of Fame night only.
Yep.
I just can't believe they can't quite they got a lot of other days in the season to squeeze up four games here. Put them on another day, not tonight.
I'm with you. Enjoy it tonight. We'll break it down tomorrow at 5.
You betcha. Talk to you then, boys. Bye.
There's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst. We're live at the Hockey Hall of Fame. Joe Bowen has joined us around the table. He's officially a Hall of Famer, although people in Toronto have known that for a long time.
Yeah, exactly.
Bonesy around the table next. We are live from the Hockey Hall of Fame, and this is always a very cool night. And if we're lucky, we get some very cool people joining us around the table.
Yes.
Okay, I can leave.
Stars.
Joe Bowen is
in the
house.
I'll see if I can find someone for you.
How's it feel to be a Hall of Famer?
Well, the jacket fits, which was nice. I was a little leery about that, and they actually got it a couple of sizes extra. So, O-Dog, I can grow into this, which is, I think, a very very important aspect at my my age. But it's been overwhelming. It's been very exciting, and it's been unbelievable how many people have reached out and just sent texts and notes and emails and phone calls, and people I grew up with in Sudbury, went to school with in Windsor, people that I, you know, players and coaches who have done. It's just it's really mind-boggling and very overwhelming.
So I don't have a rich history here in Toronto. I've only been here about 8 years, but you know, going back, we were talking in the last hour as to some of your more memorable calls. Okay, so. You know, everyone has their own individual. For me, it's the Austin Matthews four goals because it was recency bias. Yeah, yeah. I was there. If you had to maybe give us a couple of ones that stand out that over your whole career that, you know, you were very proud of and ones that, you know, you feel like it was.
You know, we've only had three 50-goal shooters. Okay. And Rick Vive, his 50 goals. Gary Lehman's 50. Dave Andrechuk's 50.
Yeah.
50th. The Nicky Borishevsky goal where, I mean, the franchise was going nowhere under Harold. And the change had been made. He had passed. And Nicky's goal literally turned the page. And they might not have won, but it wasn't going to be for the lack of funds. It wasn't going to be for the lack of effort. And there's no guarantees, and we all know this.
Yeah.
And mistakes are made and various other things. But it wasn't going to be that they're not really trying. And that turned the entire franchise around, I think. And then, you know, when you Matt's, his 500th goal was just unbelievable. The playoff series with Ottawa, take your pick, and the Bless You Boys call where literally they were in the infirmary. Everybody was out.
Yeah.
And here are these guys throwing their bodies in front of pucks. I mean, that's what hockey's all about in my estimation.
Yeah.
And just the effort. And the grit and determination of that group was really something to see. So and obviously Austin's goals and maybe the little leprechaun there too that got him into the playoffs.
Absolutely, kind of we referenced those ones.
Actually, it's funny you mention all of those, and Hayes pointed all of them out. Like the Borishevsky, you even said
Borishevsky. I figured would be number one, but correct me if I'm wrong, Bonesy. Was it not the next game when Gilmore scored in double OT against St. Louis? Was that game one?
That was game one.
So that was back-to-back calls.
Back-to-back calls. And then, of course, the Blues won in double overtime in game two. And then the Leafs had to go seven games there, had gone seven games with Detroit, and now we're in seven games with Los Angeles. And
we know how that played out.
Well, yeah. There should have been one more call there. It would have been an overtime, and Wendell would have probably got four.
Mm-hmm. Bonesy, kind of a big-picture question. I get asked it a lot, and I don't know the answer.
No, I'm not doing your phone again.
I know, but this is what people ask me. They're like, how does the person that's sitting so far away have so much excitement in their voice? Was that the most difficult thing to learn about the position that you do?
You know,
because everyone at home or in their car must be thinking – that this guy is right on top of the action.
Booger McFarlane.
Booger McFarlane style. But in act, like everyone that knows hockey knows, you're up in the gondola, you're up in the press box, and it's a totally different view to have that enthusiasm and excitement from that far away.
You know why? And a lot of people that do this job are what I am. I'm a fan. I'm a big fan of the sport. And would I change anything if I all of a sudden was transplanted to another team? Absolutely not. I mean, I sometimes I get people giving me heck that the other team scored and I thought the Leafs had because it was a great play and I get excited about it. Well, it's just not while he scored. And then let's move on. You know, I mean, you can't do that.
Yeah.
The game is too good. The game itself is too good. The players are too good. They're the best athletes in the world playing the most difficult single sport in the world to play. And I think that the game is too much fun, and I hope that I'm having fun doing it. And I know I am.
Yeah.
Joe Bowen joining us here at the Hall of Fame. He's going into the Hall of Fame this weekend. Do you miss calling big fights?
Yes. As long as I'm not in them.
Right.
But,
But back in the 80s when you got rolling, man, there'd be fights.
And even, you know, Colt Knorr and Fraser McLaren, I mean, that was the toughest team in the National Hockey League.
Right.
And if things weren't going well, will get entertained in the third period by somebody getting the snot kicked out of them. But the you know what? It's a different game. It really is. But I did a lot of boxing matches. I did Trevor Burbick's fights with Larry Holmes, and the last fight that Muhammad Ali ever did, I broadcast that. So with Trevor Burbick again. So I enjoy that part of that sport.
Yeah.
Again, I don't want to be in it.
No, of course not. No. Nobody
I don't
does.
Want my kids in it either.
No.
So
yeah.
The game, I think, has changed appropriately. But I don't – if a good dust-up happens or if Felix Potvin all of a sudden has Ron Hextall coming down the other end of the rink, that's pretty entertaining stuff.
Yeah. I know you had your buddies from Unionville today at the luncheon there where you accepted your plaque, got your jacket. Those are your hockey buddies,
yep,
right?
Yep.
Was there some of them where you're like, I can't trust this guy around this environment? Because you can only invite so many people, right?
No, they're called Liam, Derek, Sean, and David.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
your
they're
kids.
Somewhat related to me. No, you know what? I still play. I still enjoy playing. And those guys are a big part of my getting away from it, right?
Yeah.
So, and you guys know what was the best part about playing a lot? Was being in the dressing room.
Yeah.
Sometimes we're allowed to have some beverages of choice.
Right.
And just the fun and the camaraderie and the stories and everything else. And I'm very lucky that my knees and hips have held up, and I still enjoy playing goal. So I play, you know, two or three times a week, and I enjoy playing with those guys and having fun. And they're great people. That whole community, I've enjoyed playing slow pitch and hockey. And Chris Stamko, Steven's dad, and I have played ball or hockey together for 35 years, and I was very happy that he was there too.
Joe Bowen joining us here at the Hockey Hall of Fame. He has been honored all throughout the weekend. He'll be honored again tonight. A couple rapid fire ones for you here, Bonesy. The Gardens or Scotiabank?
Well, the Gardens. The Scotiabank is great for the amenities and for the people, but our vantage point where we were was spectacular, and even when it was in the middle of May and there was no air conditioning, the games were pretty good.
That's where I was going to say the sight lines, and I mean the Gardens seemed like you were right in the mix.
You know the color.
I loved it.
The first time I walked into that, I mean, the first time I got to watch it was black and white TV.
Right.
So when the first time I got to the Gardens and the colors, I went, wow, this is really neat.
That it's amazing, isn't it?
But my favorite building, Chicago Stadium.
I was going to ask you that. Is that your favorite? Is that the
always.
Best place to go on the road, or just your favorite building?
Favorite building. And I love Chicago, don't get me wrong. In fact, I probably would put it down as my favorite road. But the old building, the hair in the back of your neck stood up. And if you were a hockey player there standing on there for the national anthem and you weren't ready to do something to someone, you were in the wrong industry. That was just not happening.
Yeah, I played there. You came up with the opposing dressing room was down, and
so
you had to come up.
So was the home. Yeah,
you had to come up the stairs to the ice, and it was so
about
intimidating.
12 stairs.
You probably knew damn well how good you were going to play about halfway up.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you got injured, you got to go down those stairs. I wouldn't be surprised they'd kind of bounce them down on your rear end if you had a bad knee or something.
Yeah. No kidding.
You had to go down the stairs to get to the dressing room.
That's a good point. I didn't even think about
that. That's when buildings had character.
Well, and they were different, though.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, the corners were different.
Yeah.
The measurements were different. There was home ice advantage, and teams built their team around that building and what it had, and it was completely different.
Maple Leafs were no different. I mean, the Maple Leaf Garden was very tough and intimidating to come into. Boston Garden was, Chicago Stadium. The character of the building did match the team, and
absolutely.
You knew you were in for one if you weren't on.
Survive the first 10 minutes and see how it goes.
No kidding. Joe Bowen joining us. Obviously, the one call that's been elusive has been that cup call. Even just the cup final. We'll take a game one call, let alone game seven.
Absolutely.
But, I mean, what would that mean to you to have that opportunity?
This weekend is a crowning point as far as my career is concerned in broadcasting, but that would be the crowning moment of my sports career for sure. And people have asked me, well, what would you say? I said, and I have often said to them, I don't know, because I don't want to make it sound like it's contrived, and it's we're just going to, however it's there, it'll come out, and hopefully it'll be, and I pray that it's not like the Chicago Blackhawks guys, the first time they won the cup, when
the goal on Leighton,
they had no idea that the puck was in the net. Yeah. So you never hear that iconic call of the Blackhawks have ended the long drought and have won the Stanley Cup. And oh, sorry,
that's a
We're
great
not
point.
Sure if it was in,
yeah.
So I hope I get to see it. Well, make a good call of it.
And it would be totally spontaneous.
I've many times said I'm not going to come up with some contrived thing that has to be woven into the fabric of what it'll happen, whatever happens.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, we can't thank you enough for finding time for us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
I know you're getting pulled in every single direction. And congrats on a great career, and we know you'll have continued success. And we always love seeing you, and enjoy tonight.
So am I a ring bearer?
In Vegas?
In Vegas. Do I have to dress up like Dumb and Dumber? Or
What character would you be then?
Oh, I would be the bus driver with the girls. Can I do that?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We can find that position for you.
That position?
You're going to be down there, right?
Well,
the Leafs are playing.
And I can drive a motorhome, so I can, I'm ready for that. I think I could be a good guy on that.
Bonesy, will work you into the script.
Yeah, perfect.
There he is. Hall of Famer Joe Bowen. Always great to see him. And he's down here at the Hall of Fame. Again, Say I Do with Overdrive in Las Vegas this Valentine's Day. The O-Dog Noodles and I are ready to become your groomsmen. Send an email to vegas1050@bellmedia.ca. vegas1050@bellmedia.ca. And tell us why you and your better half want to tie the knot or renew your vows Overdrive style. And you could be getting hitched in Vegas with flights and accommodations provided by tripcentral.ca. Send a photo, shoot a video, get creative. Details at tsn1050.ca. And Joe Bowen will be down there, so I'm sure we'll catch up with him and Ralphie. And all the Toronto media will be down there. The Leafs are playing Vegas that night. We're going to the game, so get married. We'll hang out at the game, the whole nine. Again, send an email to vegas1050@bellmedia.ca and get creative, courtesy of our friends at tripcentral.ca. We are live at the Hall of Fame, and we're going to get a bunch of people joining us around the table. They're all starting to pour in here. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. We are live from the Hockey Hall of Fame, and it is a petting zoo down here. There is media everywhere, and a lot of the Hall of Famers are starting to walk in. Not the inductees from tonight, but a lot of the former Hall of Famers, or I guess guys who have been in the hall for quite some time.
How do you call them that? I there's always the argument about it where when you say that guy's a former first rounder, well, still a first rounder.
Yeah.
He was a first rounder, but he
previously like, inducted.
So
exactly.
It's the same thing. We say previously inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. It doesn't really matter.
No.
It's semantics. But you know who's a Hall of Famer.
Exactly.
And who's not a Hall of Famer based on who's walking down the red carpet. I like that they have literally a red carpet.
Yeah, they should.
Literally a red carpet for the big honchos to go cruising through.
Now, would you call it, is this floater central?
Yeah, there's a lot of floaters.
Tons of flotation devices around here.
I don't know what the security levels are like kicking around here. But
somebody came behind us and almost stepped on our McDonald's bag.
Yeah, I love that. I love how we have a McDonald's bag in here. If you missed it at 4 p.m., we announced it. Our buddy Jeff, who's just a fan of the show and now a friend of the show. At around 3:45, it's packed with media in here, and this guy rolls in with like $40 worth of McDonald's in a massive like duffel bag and goes, "Here, guys, I thought you might be hungry."
And
essentially saying, "I know you're all absolute slobs, and even though you're acting professional and you all have your suits on, here's McDonald's."
And we ate it. That's the thing. We ate it in front of everyone proudly.
And now it's just wafting. The whole Hall of Fame smells like a McDonald's like back kitchen because
of
the three of us.
I love it.
You guys see Ric Flair at the Ticats game?
I thought it was awesome. And Duthie interviewed him, too. That I thought it was great.
Was he like, into it, or was he?
He looked like he kind of mailed the one in with Duthie.
He's kind of always got that buzz going. You know, it kind of feels like he may have had a big night the night before or maybe that day. And based on his history, he's admitted that he would go out every single day.
He's had a rough go,
for like 20 or 30 years.
Didn't he say he used to drink like he drank for like 20 years straight?
Every single day.
He'd have like – someone get the stats. I think it's like 30 drinks a day.
My biggest thing is the voice. Like I try to do that, woo, or whatever.
Woo!
I can't do it. Like he's got
– it's actually a spectacular catchphrase. I think it's the best catchphrase in all of sports, Hollywood, music.
You think so?
I think it's What's better? Tell me someone that's got a better catchphrase than Ric Flair.
Boom goes the dynamite.
How many rinks have adopted that after a big play?
A big goal?
Woo!
Annoying is that in Boston? That's exactly what they do. They score, they make the announcement, and then Ric Flair starts popping off.
Woo!
Ric Flair says he had at least 15 drinks per day before he nearly died.
Yeah, and that was like a 30-year campaign. 30 years of him having like 15 drinks a day.
That is.
But he was in the Tabby's locker room before the game, and you can laugh at it, you can scoff at it. The fact is, it worked.
Yeah.
They smoked BC yesterday, and this is what the nature boy Ric Flair, also a Hall of Famer, had to say to the Ticats earlier yesterday afternoon.
Looking as only you can look, kicking ass today.
And they went out and laid a beating on the Lions.
You know they are calling him saying, whatever your appearance fee, we'll double it for the next game.
Yeah, you have to. You
got to
ride Ric Flair and his coattails all the way to the Grey Cup.
Yes.
He did sound like he had had a few. I mean, I'm sure I think he's dry now, but I mean, it did sound like he's had a rough go or no sleep the night before. But that's what I always wonder this. The nature boy. What is that?
Who cares?
He doesn't care.
I don't think it means anything. I don't really know who came up with it, how it was.
I'm not a big wrestling fan, but the nicknames are quite brilliant.
The Nature Boy is a great one.
The Nature Boy. Like, what was that? Ted DiBiase.
The Million Dollar Man.
Million Dollar Man.
Yeah, that was back in the heyday. The Snake. And
yeah, those ones, the Ultimate Warrior, those are the best ones.
Brutus the Barber Beefcake.
There was nothing better than Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
He became a comedian.
Yeah, you've told us that story before.
Yeah, it's crazy, but
he's the one that wore the kilt, right?
Yeah, wore the kilt.
I think he passed away.
Yeah. He did. Hot Rod.
Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Yep.
Didn't he have like a 2x4?
Yeah, he came out with a 2x4.
My kids, when we go eat sushi in Vaughn, there's this superhero Pokemon place. It's a weird kind of kid place, and there's all these dolls and all these different things, and I said to the guy in there, I'm like, do you have like old wrestling figures? And they had all of them from back in the day, the Hulkster, and they were I go, you really charge people $70 for these things? He goes, these things go like hotcakes.
Oh dude, guys like us, losers who were fans like 25 years ago.
Yeah.
That's when I was there at WrestleMania 6 at the Sky Dome.
Me too. So was I.
And
with my grandfather.
I was there with my uncle.
Yeah, that's when the Ultimate Warrior fought Hulk Hogan.
Absolutely
was. It was like the greatest day of my life.
And I think I was on Team Hulkster. I can't remember. But the Warrior, he picked up a big W.
Did he?
He had a big outing that afternoon. That was awesome.
See, like that was how many years ago would that have been?
That was 1989, I think. Maybe 1990.
I don't think my grandfather, who's not with us anymore, cares that I ever didn't win a Stanley Cup. He went to that, and he loved every second of it. He loved wrestling.
Say what you want about it. Incredible energy in that building.
Theater. But
incredible energy in that building. I'll never forget it. We're live at the Hockey Hall of Fame. We're going to have some Hall of Famers join us around the table in the next hour. We'll get back into the William Nylander reports. The Leafs in Boston on Saturday night, in Jersey on Friday night. They go 1-for-1 over the weekend, and now they head out west. And the Raptors are in action tonight with New Orleans in town. We'll tee that up as well. Overdrive continues on the TSN app.
Woo!